The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes. Stomps.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Hey guys, this is Andy. This episode is from an interview Rick Welch had with Chris June, the executive producer and special effects coordinator of the global television and movie series phenomena, The Chosen. You can access the video by going to our Patreon page and becoming a subscriber at www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. That's www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, I'm super excited about this one. I got to give a great shout out to my friend, Eric Auger. He made this connection for me. And today I have executive producer of The Chosen, Chris June, here. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Rick. How you doing?
Man, I'm so excited to have you. You can see in the background, Out of Order Studios. Guys, let me give you a little background. Chris June is a seasoned producer and visual effects expert who has played a key role in major Hollywood productions over the past two decades. He began his career at Sony Pictures Imageworks, working on live action to CG hybrid films, and eventually helped launch the Sony Pictures Animation Division after contributing to Robert Zemeckis' The Polar Express. Over the years, June took on pivotal production roles for animated hits like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, its sequel, Arthur Christmas, and Surf's Up, as well as visual effects production on Beowulf and The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. In 2015, June co-founded Out of Order Out of Order Studios alongside Chad Gunderson, stepping into the world of faith-based television. As executive producer and visual effects lead, he has helped shepherd The Chosen, the multi-season series dramatizing the life of Jesus, into becoming a cultural phenomenon. His versatile background in animation, technical artistry, and large-scale storytelling brings a unique creative depth to both cinematic and serialized projects. So, what an amazing background. Wow. Robert Zemeckis, didn't he do Back to the Future as well?
He did. Yeah, no, when talk about watching a movie growing up and then getting to work with your hero, it's an amazing thing that happened. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I got to ask you. So, in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, the part whenever Gandalf says, "You shall not pass," were you a part of that? Did you work?
No. So, the interesting thing about that one is, so when on especially very large films, right, and large visual effects films, when the plan goes a little bit off kilter, they have kind of like this 911 kind of work that comes about. So, we got a call. We weren't part of the initial shooting. It was more of a, hey, this sequence. So it was actually the marsh sequence, where he kind of falls in and all the underwater stuff and stuff like that. So we set up a small team at Sony to pick that one up and help them get that movie delivered.
Wow. Yeah, that's so cool. And we are going to get to The Chosen towards the end of this, but I have to ask you, one of my favorite scenes from The Chosen was when Jesus was walking on water with Peter. And you were involved in that scene, correct?
That is. Yeah, there's a fun story in that one. So when we started, so in the very beginning of The Chosen, Dallas was kind of like, he really didn't have a whole lot of interest in visual effects. So there was this philosophy, and the philosophy still maintains, which is, you know, if you do a big visual effect, you don't want people talking about how did the effect happen. So the whole story philosophy behind The Chosen is really engaging at an intimate level with people, right? And so if you sit there and you're like, oh, how did they turn water into wine, and it takes you out of the story, then you lose all interest. So you'll notice that we don't show a whole lot. So from the beginning, he was saying, yeah, walk on water. Yeah, we're not going to do that. It'll be what he calls it, spectacle over being intimate, right? And so So when we got the scripts for season three and they all kind of landed, I got a text from Dallas on the side. And he says, you might want to start reading episode 8 first. So, and so what had happened is he had figured out a way. He had figured out a way that it was, you know, I tell people that conversation was really a conversation between Simon and Jesus, and it could have happened anywhere. It just happened to happen on water, which was pretty cool.
That's one of the brilliant parts about Dallas's writing and the other guys that write and work on the show is that they tie in, they go outside of the Bible, which I, you know, with some creative license, which some people don't like, but I love it. I love the idea that they develop character. It makes it seem more realistic for us as just people who are living daily lives and, you know, the struggles that we have and how he sort of incorporates that with each character in some unique way to bring it home. And it really is a powerful way. And I won't give away any kind of spoiler because it's coming, you know, it's out on Amazon right now. But guys, whenever Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane and how he tells that story was so phenomenal. Kudos to Mr. Jenkins and the writing staff on that one. That was incredible. But I want to talk about you. I'm really curious, somebody that's been working in Hollywood for 2 decades and to hear that you have a strong faith and you want to work in faith-based media is so phenomenal to me. And one of my friends that I went to high school with, Turhan Kalak, he's in the show. One of my friends, Steve Shermet, who is a very faithful Christian, he plays a rabbi, Josiah, and Capernaum, and I've seen him on there, and I know how strong his faith is. And just to see all of you men and women working together to share this story, you know, about Jesus, it's a big deal to me and my family. We love to watch these episodes, but I want to know about you. I'm very curious. I always ask my guests this question, and if you can answer, that's great. To the best of your ability, can you tell me the earliest memory of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
Oh, wow. You know, it would have been at a very, very young age. I was raised in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So I went through all the steps. And so, I mean, I remember, gosh, so from catechism and all and everything. So you know, probably as early as 5, 7, somewhere in there, just, you know, the stories and, but for me personally, and I think everybody's got a personal journey. I think I knew of, but I didn't have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. I guess in many ways, probably raised culturally Catholic is probably a safe way to put it, right? To where it was like you're kind of going through the steps. And so I feel like Jesus and God have been part of my vernacular and part of my life for as long as I can remember. But I think impacting in my life, not so much, if that tracks for you.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, a lot of my guests come from that similar kind of background, more of a cultural Christianity. It was around their families, and but usually it's later when the Lord invades the life of somebody and changes it. So I'm very curious. Can you tell me about that, when that moment happened for you?
Yeah. So an interesting thing is that actually, so my oldest daughter was born in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what started my wife and I on a different type of journey. So her being born and just starting to kind of really, kind of want something different, right? Want something more. And ironically, it started off, the driving force seemed to be for her, right? Like, oh, I want her to know. And so we kind of very naturally just kind of went back to our roots. And so we kind of reached out to a Catholic church, and we were looking like, how do we, you know, all the things that had happened, all the things that we had, that we had done as babies and kids. And so looked at like, okay, well, I'm not attending a church, but how do I get my daughter baptized? And my aunt, I remember her specifically kind of saying, "It's great that you guys are doing this, but what about for you? Like you're doing these actions, you're doing these things for your daughter, What about for you? And that my wife and I have this term now, you know, kind of my wife kind of came up with it, like a pebble in your shoe, right? And there was, so there was like this pebble in our shoe, and we're kind of, you know, doing our thing. And so we got my daughter baptized in a Catholic church not too far from our house in Los Angeles, and then started to try to attend services, but it just didn't resonate. It wasn't affecting us. My mom would come to town, and she had since switched to, you know, a little bit away from the Catholic Church and more towards just a kind of a Bible-based church. And so she was coming out, and, you know, on holidays, and we'd be like, oh, do you want to go to midnight mass? And, you know, all the things that, again, we were kind of accustomed to. And she's like, no, you know, but one year she was like, no, I'm good. I found a church not too far from you that I'm going to go to. And so it was called Journey of Faith in Manhattan Beach. And my wife and I one day were like, well, let's go with her. Like, you know, so it was really my mom. And so her little home away from home church that she would go to when she was visiting us, we went to, and it was very, very impactful for us and really kind of related and resonated on a different level. And I think that was the moment, that church in particular is when our lives really changed. We ended up, all three of us ended up getting baptized in that church. So that is distinctly when I think my what I call my current faith journey began, was with Journey of Faith, going to that church, and then really even being challenged as a leader and as a man, and, you know, getting into a Bible study. I mean, everything that I had constructed on what I thought, you know, or kind of had been raised upon, just all started to fall apart and build new.
Yeah. So with your mother doing this, and then your wife, and, you know, I love that pebble in the shoe. That's really good. We, here in the South, we called it the Hound of Heaven. He just kept bugging us and kept following us and kept, you know, but that's one thing. It just keeps eating at you. And so your journey of faith at the Journey of Faith Church in Manhattan Beach begins, and it becomes real to you. And it's something that you've cultivated, I assume, since that day. It's just been something that the Spirit's been in your life this whole time.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because, again, you know, I was sitting there, and there was actually a men's Bible study on Tuesdays called Men Made New, and it was a fairly large church. So there was at least 100, 120 men coming together on a Tuesday, and then they would break up into these smaller Bible studies of groups of like 8 to 10. And I remember my wife kind of putting, you know, we're going to the church, and I think at this point we're volunteering, and, you know, we're giving, you know, we're working in children's ministry, and we're members of the church, but I wasn't doing anything on my own. And so this Men Made New thing kept coming up, and I was just kind of very intimidated by it. And this notion of getting into a Bible study. And so I remember that she kept, I'd go to get my car to go to work, and there'd be a flyer that would be sitting there or whatever. So she was, versus God putting a pebble in my shoe, I think my wife was putting a pebble in my shoe. and so it was interesting because I was, you know, here I am. I'm, you know, by this point, I've been within the studio system for quite a while, and you know, a leader in the company and stuff like that, but very intimidated to go to a men's Bible study. And God is so faithful and just so gentle with us. I show up and I end up at a table just kind of randomly, just based off a study that kind of caught my interest, and end up with 8 people that are still very influential in my life to this day. Very common interests outside of just even, you know, it was like just being able to sit down and feel very comfortable and relating to people. Mm-hmm. And then that was the next phase. And that really kind of rocked me that, you know, all these things that I thought I was going through on my own, now I never had anybody to share kind of life with. And mm-hmm. then this notion of, the struggles that I have not being unique, and not being, so just being able to relate to people and then just to learn how they've leaned on God. So that's really from a man and a husband and a leader. That's when the foundation really started to begin, and the pursuit, and it was just, and it really has never, you know, has really never stopped. I will say that, you know, the whole steps of leaving Los Angeles, you know, and coming out, was, that's a whole faith journey. And if you, I joke a lot, if you want to grow your faith, come work on the chosen. So, you know, so there have definitely been steps since then towards like, oh, okay. You know, I feel like going to men's Bible study for a long time and really, really investing in a church changed my life. But it's interesting now to look back and go, okay, that was kind of first gear compared to where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that even on smaller scales, like with my podcast, for example. I mean, this only started, you know, 5.5 years ago. And just coming on that journey, just reading the Bible and trying to understand it to the best of my ability, trying to get rid of some of the presuppositions that I always brought to it and just learn from it, has radically changed my life. And I can't even imagine being on something, you know, as larger scale like The Chosen, where you have so many other people, because just, you know, we have 7 people total on our cast. And I can't imagine, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people around and things that happen on set and things that happen to particular actors or writers or whomever. I'm sure there's stories like that going around. But the challenge of the faith, I'm sure there's been times when things probably seemed impossible and it came through, right? Would you say that you've seen that?
Yeah, happen? I think. Yeah, so back, if I stay back at the Sony days, you know, again, I feel like I always had a way of managing people. There, in other words, I don't think the core of who I am changed, right? At least on how I managed people, how I felt like, you know, but the all of a sudden there became a purpose to it. So I remember, you know, again, you start hearing sermons of, you know, and our pastor, Pastor Glenn, he was a historian, right? So he would teach you from a historical standpoint, but he would give you application. And I remember just being challenged, you know, look at your checkbook and look at your calendar. And I think we've all heard those, right? And so here I am, and I'm feeling like, okay, I'm doing good. I'm doing good at home. But then I was like, okay, look at my calendar and where I'm putting my time and money. And I was like, okay, I'm in the studio system. That's a hostile faith environment, if you will, in many ways. And so, I started to look for ways to live out my faith and be a little bit more bold within the walls. Some of that was just even having a cross or some kind of an indication on my office, right? I had my own office, the music that I chose to listen to. So again, it gave a little bit more depth to how I was acting and again, I do think that my patience level and the way I treated people was elevating. Again, I think I was always pretty good at it, but it was definitely, I remember Sony going through rounds of layoffs, and people that didn't work for me, they would come to my office, and it felt like a safe haven, and they wanted to be able to talk and going through the troubles and stuff like that. So I think it became evident that people would seek you out, right? And I think that's where you start to, you know, when you start to live your life in a way and then you give a meaning for people, then it was interesting to watch that dynamic shift where, you know, people would set a meeting. I'm like, I don't even know what this is about. They're not even on my show right now, you know, and they come in and just kind of worried for their family. You know, then that opens up the opportunity for conversation. So even within, and again, you know, I got to put some context. I think it's gotten worse since I've left, but I mean, so I left Sony in 2014. But you know, for a good 5 years there of trying to really, live my faith out a little stronger.
I think it's, without sounding too cliche, because these kinds of stories happen a lot, you know, you're somebody that's working within, you know, the Hollywood studio system, you know, you're in Sony or whomever else that you may have worked with. Did you find it initially, once your faith really took root, you know, were there things that were challenging you in this studio system that were difficult for you to overcome? Do you understand my question? Like,
yeah, I don't think there was anything like, I don't think there was any kind of persecution or anything like that. I think the challenges, I don't feel like I had spiritual challenges within that notion. And again, I think there was just, I think those were my formation years of just who I was and how I approached things versus, you know, flash forward to The Chosen, right? Where I think those are just kind of like, you look at things that cause an event, right? You see huge things that you don't understand what are happening. And then you can very easily just try to trust through the event and then realize that God's plan was bigger and better than anything we had going, right? And those types of impacts, now people are going, wait, what is going on, right? So these are non-believers that can, so nothing of that nature, but I think it was more personal of people going through struggles and layoffs and fear of losses of jobs. And then again, just the complexities. We worked long hours inside the studio system and it's not an easy life for families, right? So being able to guide and mentor people in those, so that's more what it was then. Like I said, it's definitely grown into something bigger now.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so here's the deal. Lately, I've been getting these compliments like, wow, you really know how to cook. And I just smile and nod like, oh yeah, totally. I'm basically a pro. But behind the scenes, it's all thanks to my secret ingredient. So let me break it down for you. First up is everything seasoning. And this literally goes on everything. Chicken, perfect. Fish, yep. Veggies, next level. And one day, I got creative and sprinkled it on popcorn, and honestly, life-changing. Now everybody wants to come to my house to watch the movies. I also tried it on cottage cheese. Is that weird? Yep. Did I regret it? Also, yep. But now, let's talk about Steakhouse. This isn't just seasoning, it's grill legend in a jar. You shake this on a steak, and suddenly you become Buck. Who is Buck, you ask? He's the flannel-wearing, boot-stomping king of the barbecue pit. Buck chops down trees with his bare hands, grills a T-bone so good it'll make you want to slap Gordon Ramsay's mama right in the mouth. I grilled up some burgers with Steakhouse last weekend, and my buddy took one bite and said, dude, can I please get this recipe? I just told him it was my little secret. So if you want to look like a kitchen rock star and keep your secret weapon close, head to mysecretblends.com. That's mysecretblends.com. And use code Burrows at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's B-U-R-R-O-S at checkout to get 20% off of your first order. So shake it, serve it, and when they ask, just grin and say, it's my little secret. My secret ingredient. Get yours today.
One of the things that I was so impressed with what I saw in your resume was the cloudy with a chance of meatballs. So tell me, how much, like, what all did you do with that, with those films?
Yeah. So the interesting, the cool thing on those is by that time I'm involved pretty early on. Right. So they, we'd gone through a couple of rounds of directors, and then two really who've turned out to be, I mean, just into really big studio or Hollywood favorites, Chris and Phil, who are directors on that. So they were writers on it. And then the director at the time just wasn't quite getting the vision of what they had written, right? So the studio kind of went to them and they asked them to kind of do another pass on it. And they said, you know what, we'd rather take a pass at directing and getting our vision up on that. So they had never directed something of this level in CG, so in 3D, and at this price. So I it was a blessing for me to be able to come along such great filmmakers, right, that were right at the beginning of their career and kind of help them along. So I worked, my position at those days was taking pretty much when they would finish the script all the way through the delivery. So and kind of helping them navigate, helping the directors navigate all the complexities of that process, which is it's a hugely collaborative. Animation's a fun process because it's very collaborative when it's done right. And so every department gets this opportunity to kind of plus it, right? So we're on a live action, everything's kind of happening at the same time. You're calling action, the actors are going, everything's kind of moving at once, and it's a dance. In animation, there's these processes that it kind of goes through, and that's why it takes so long. But it's just watching every department kind of increase the, you know, when it comes off the script, you go into a thing called storyboard, and they get a chance to, you know, add visual jokes and modify things. And then, you know, the animators get a hold of it and they get to bring it to life. The actors given the voices to it. So so overseeing all of that was my job on Cloudy with these two directors as a partner.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of work, but it sounds like a lot of fun, kind of both.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because working in film can be just like anything else. It can start to feel like a job. Mm-hmm. And working in animation and visual effects can kind of really get to a grind. So it's mindset. So I remember Chris and Phil, at the end of it, I told them, I said, I think you really taught me what it should be like to be at an animation studio and fun, a common task of handing out t-shirts as a thank you, right? We would design t-shirts and we'd hand them out to the crew, and they just didn't want to hand out t-shirts. They wanted a t-shirt gun. So, you know, those things that launch them into stadiums. And they're like, I was like, oh, okay. You know, so we went and had to find a t-shirt gun, and we're launching these t-shirts across a football field for people to catch them and stuff like that. So, you know, just doing things fun. So, you know, you can always learn different things from different people. So,
yeah. So tell me about the move. There comes a time when you decide to leave California and you're ready to start Out of Order Studios, I assume.
Yeah, that is a pretty massive, faith journey. I'd say that's a very next really big step for my wife and I. Mm-hmm. So I just hit to a point to where I just kind of knew. After 19 years of being at Sony, I'd been saying for about 10 years prior, you know, at some point I will hit a point to where I will know that this is no longer right. And so the kind of the gauge for me is I always felt like I was fight for what I felt was best for the company. And so it got to a point to where I was fighting for what I felt was best for the company, but the company had different thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of jobs were being shipped to Canada and again, lives being affected. And it just got to a point where I was like, I don't know if I can be as effective in this role. And so, so it was the beginning of this journey to where I quit my job and I didn't know what I was going to do. Mm. We decided that we were going to move to Texas. And so we did this all on our own. So there was no severance package. There was no, talking about a leap of faith. There was no safety net whatsoever. We had our house in California in escrow. We had a house in Texas in escrow, and it fell through for weird reasons. And so the house in California fell through, so it caused the house in Texas to fall through. What else was going on? Oh, we were transitioning our daughter from public school to homeschool. And so there were just all these things that were like any of these are all stressors in people's lives. That on their own is enough, right? Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were just in a groove on praying, on staying in sync. And so there was this odd sense of peace through moving and all these transitions. So we ended up leaving before the house sold, ended up moving in with my mom for a bit just to try to get reestablished, because we needed it. Even though we were homeschooling, there's still the start of a school year and there was a community. And I just remember we were driving and we were halfway here, and Chad and I, my business partner, we had already met, and, you know, we were trying to figure out, you know, what we were going to do. And, you know, and my wife about halfway through, she goes, I think I know the name of your company, what it needs to be if you guys set something up. And I was like, okay. And she says, out of order. And I was like, okay, well, where are you getting that? She goes, well, everything that we're doing is out of order of the world, right? Like the world's looking at us like you're quitting your job before you know where you're going to go. You're moving before you know where you're going to live. You're like everything. She goes, but but everything has been in God's perfect order. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and there's been this sense of peace and that was just unexplainable, right, through the whole thing. And so in a gas station in El Paso, I called Chad and I was like, hey, if we do this, it needs to be Out of Order Studios. And he's like, done. So so that's how that all came about. But again, like I said, it was this, you know, leaving a career of 20 years and not knowing what you're going to do. And not only that, I end up living in, you know, just outside of Fort Worth. You know, what do I do with my skill sets? Right. Like what, you know, am I going to end up at Home Depot? Like, okay, God, what's going to go on? And Chad and I did a couple of, you know, we did a documentary and then we did some live events. We did like a Bible Bee game show and a live event for a Bible Bee live event. And then we had this animation project. We had somebody who approached us about an animation project. And so we were kind of doing that and that fell through. And so that was another test for me because, you know, I think I was holding on to things, right? I was like, okay, I'm out of the studio system. And I was holding real tight. And so I tend to do like open my hands up a lot to people because it's me symbolizing that I'm not trying to hold on tight. So I was like, these projects, I was like, okay, I'm outside the studio system and I can do this on my own. I don't have to change. But I wasn't listening to God and what God was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I mean, I'm praying for this project to get its funding back and get back on track. And I'm just so focused on that. And while that's going on, Dallas reaches out to Chad. And he tells him, he says, hey, I got this project that's based off of something I did for my church. I don't know. They're talking, this group is really interested. They're talking about, you know, crowdfunding it, you know, and then they both at the same time go, yeah, crowdfunding never works. But then when Chad was describing it, we both honestly weren't that interested, right?
Mm,
it was,
yeah, wow.
It was just, and from our perspective, you know, just, you know, does the world need another Bible story, right? Another telling of the Jesus story. Done because again the budget was going to be really low, so you know, a low budget, you know, my Chad, who's done, you know, he was in the independent side of Christian filmmaking for a long, long time while I was in the studio system. He's like, yeah, we just don't need what he called, you know, he says the world doesn't need more crappy Christian projects. Mm-hmm. And so we were just trying to figure it out, and this is without even reading it. It's just, so Dallas sends over the four scripts and Chad reads that first script and he kind of looks at me and he goes, you need to read this. This is different. So, you know, all this time I'm sitting there praying for God to restore this one project and I'm all focused over here and just on what I want, what I think. And God is laying the groundwork for something that none of us could have expected. You know,
yeah, so. I imagine that you never imagined that it would be a global phenomenon like it's become.
No, in fact, we look back and, you know, so we had enough money to start shooting the first four episodes of season one. Mm-hmm. And it was decided that we needed to go ahead and go. So we started shooting the first four episodes. And honestly, I don't think anybody knew if there would be an episode five. We didn't know if season one, you know, what we now call season one, you know, would ever be completed. Mm-hmm. And then the funny thing is, and we joke about it now, is so really Chad or Dallas reached out to Chad, and Chad's like, well, I got my business partner, and you know, Dallas and I still joke. I don't think he knew what to do with me. You know, here I'm, you know, I'm the last project I worked on was $125 million. And, you know, we've got this really small, you know, project that's being done at the time for under $4 million to just be done in Peaster, Texas. And, you know, where do I fit into this whole thing? And then I don't know if you know this, but so it would have been Thanksgiving of, I guess, 18. I get a call. We're on, and Dallas had just found out that we couldn't shoot. So the Miracle of the Fish scene, the lake told us that we couldn't use the fish that we were trying to use, live or dead. You couldn't introduce them into the lake system. It was going to be bad for the environment. And so we couldn't use any fish at all. And so we shoot that scene in 3 days. And, you know, from Dallas's perspective, you look at it, you know, this is the end of the first four episodes, right? This is the big scene. So if he's going to get, if people are going to get excited about this series, you know, there's some great storytelling, but this is the big payoff. And now we have nothing. So very few people kind of realize, but there's not a single real fish in that scene.
No idea.
Yeah. So we had, you know, so we started plotting it out, and you know, talk about, this is probably, if you've tracked The Chosen at all, you know, these things that we've now deemed these Red Sea moments. And this is probably, I think we all kind of have identified, this is probably, we weren't calling it this at the time, but probably our very first Red Sea moment, which was, we had 3 days to plan out a visual effects thing that would have normally taken inside the studio system 3 months of planning.
Wow.
Dallas was not used to doing visual effects. This was way outside his comfort zone, because we, you know, again, and but you know, the irony is that God had placed me here to be able to guide that through, you know what I mean? So it's like the not knowing where it's going to fit, and then being able to help them get across the finish line on a very complicated, you know, process. So
yeah, and you feel like you're there, that's your reason for being there in that moment.
Yeah, no, that for sure. I think that was the very first thing, right? It was like, oh, okay, now all of a sudden. And so I end up, you know, I've grown with the project, but yeah, I think that was the first indication of, oh, okay, God, I see what you're doing here, you know, which is just another confirmation, you know, on the path.
Absolutely. So, and just so you know, my wife, Holly, her favorite episode of the entire series so far is season 1, episode 1. It's still by far her most favorite. And when she shares it with friends and tells everybody, she was like, just watch the first episode and watch the character Lilith and watch what happens. Just pay close attention. And it is a powerful episode. It really is one of the best pilots of Christian film and television that I've ever seen.
Yeah, from a storytelling standpoint, again, that's kind of like when you read that on the page, right? And you just see what's happening. And it was kind of this mix and match of what Chad and I were wanting to do, right? Which was this, taking this slower aspect of, you know, storytelling, but doing it in a way that you're getting much more on screen. Again, you know, you go back and you look at the first four episodes to where we are now, there's a considerable amount of growth, but the one thing that is always held up is the core of the storytelling and the approach, right? And so it was the perfect match of trying to blend Chad's skill sets and mine. So really kind of watching how you spend the dollar versus trying to do it at a level. And, you know, it's just of the belief that, you know, we talk a lot about, I feel like Christians get upset that culture has kind of gone off the rails, but we really stepped back from media, right? So we yielded media, and then we got mad that culture went a certain way. And it's like, you know, I think what The Chosen has really shown is that there's a hunger for good quality storytelling, right? That
absolutely
values, and that's it's been quite the ride to be able to be kind of, I describe it, you know, you have things like Passion of the Christ, and I say, you know, that was very impactful, but that was kind of like a big, like a pebble thrown in a lake, and there's these ripple effects where The Chosen, because of its longevity and because it's, you know, because of the series aspect of it, it's more like a wake that's being left, right? So it's like we're in this boat, and it's disrupting, and you know, we're hoping that we can leave enough in that wake for other projects. You know, again, now you have House of David, and you have all these other things that are coming about that hopefully can really start to show that there's a desire at that level.
Yeah, I definitely think there is. I know during the Christmas season, whenever Dallas had directed, you know, the best Christmas pageant ever. Yeah. And we went to the theater and it was packed. And I was like, this is incredible. You know, I remember watching that show on television when I was a kid. And now all of these people are in the theater. And it's sort of something that most people want to stay home and they want to watch it on their home systems. But that movie, there was a lot of people in the theater. I was really happy. And I was like, this is a good sign. I think that, and it was like your partner had said, we don't need another crappy Christian film out there, you know, like, and it's, right. You're right. And I think that's where Dallas and all of you get this correct, is that you are actually putting out really well-written content and you're not going too far over the top. You're really developing the characters. And I'm curious, have you had any issue, like a lot of, I personally have had pushback because I love The Chosen so much, and they're like, "Oh, it's too far away from the Bible." Have you had anybody say that to you?
Yeah, you know, I think well, Dallas gets it all the time.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I think that, you know, but yeah, no, I think we've had there's been, you know, with any successful thing, I think there's pushback and controversy and stuff like that. I think people need to realize that it's never has been meant to be a replacement for the Bible. And sure. And the guiding principles from a storytelling standpoint is it plausible, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you think about what pastors do on Sunday mornings, is they tell you plausible scenarios for characters all the time. The difference is that they're not putting a visual to it, right? And mm-hmm. and a story arc to it. And so, you know, I think it's just not for everybody. And I think that's okay. But I do think that there's so many people. Here's a fun story. So let's see, it would have been season two. You know, we introduce this character, Nathaniel, right? Mm-hmm. And so we end up in a room and we're with the Bible app, the guys who put out the Bible app, which is what they're approaching a billion downloads or whatever. And they're telling us that for 3 days that they were tracking a glitch, what they thought was a glitch in their search, right? And it was because this search for Bartholomew had just gone off the charts. And come to find out, 3 days earlier, we had released our episode with Nathaniel. Right? Or so I guess it was actually, so I guess it's not, I guess it was a search for Nathaniel. But what happens is, you know, a lot of translations, people are used to Bartholomew, right? And so they're like, okay, what's The Chosen up to? They've gone off the, you know, or whatever. And but the interesting thing is that it's pointing people back to their Bible. So even the people that disagree, right? Because there'll be something that comes out, they'll go search for it, right? Mm-hmm. And go, that's not in there. And then they'll go, oh, wow, it is. It's just, okay. And so I think if that is its purpose, right, is to really just point people back mm-hmm. in a meaningful way. And again, and the stories that we get about people's lives changed, you know.
Yes.
And there's people in my life. I just had it recently. We cater from a certain place for parties. And so my daughter's about to have a 15th birthday party, and I'd reached out to her, and I guess in my signature, she saw that I was part of The Chosen, and she had no idea. And she said, I've been going through such a hard time. She goes, I come home, and that's what I've been for months. I've just been watching it at night.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, and I really feel like it's helping point me back to the Bible and get me through these times. And you're like, you know, it's just, That's why you do it, right? So for all the critics and I understand, right? If you think that we're adding to, but which we're not, right? It's everything scriptural is maintained, but it's plausible storylines alongside, right? Or
yes.
And so I think Dallas is, he's uniquely wired to navigate this ship, and it's been really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, I know. I'll just say this, talking about the walking on water scene, how he navigated with Eden and the child and Peter and watching Jesus perform miracles for others, but not necessarily for his wife. And then later when she's going through the purification and he is also, that story was so well written. And the thing is, like, this is Old Testament and New Testament kind of like happening all at once. And that's something that The Chosen does brilliant. I remember the Nicodemus talk with Jesus and how earlier in the episode, how it goes back, and talks about, the bronze serpent, that's going to be, well, Jesus talks about that in John chapter 3, but we don't really focus on that early part. We focus on the later part, for God so loved the world. But what about where, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness? And that's the beauty of it. It's like, there are things that Dallas and whoever else is writing this, they're bringing this out too. And it's something that we've been overlooking in the Bible some, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, the writer's room on this one. So Ryan Swanson's kind of the head writer, Dallas, and then Tyler Thompson. It's unbelievable.
Yes.
But no, you're right. And the thing is that there's things that you skim over, right? And again, and I think that happens a lot. And it gives you a different visual, right? To go back and dig back in. And like I said, I think it's definitely, we hear so many stories about people's faith being kind of rejuvenated. I kind of said it a little bit to where, I think if you're not growing, right? So at Sony, I got to a place and I was like, oh, okay, I've got this. And, and then as long as you're pursuing, God notches. And then, so then we do the move and there's a notch, right? And then you do the Chosen and there's a little notch. And then every season of The Chosen has been a notch, and it has been, my faith is just, now it's gotten to, it used to be my home life trying to influence my work life. Now my work life comes back to influence my growth with my faith back at home. Right. And so it's a journey.
It sounds like you have a very remarkable wife who is in this journey with you, because from the start, the pebble in the shoe, she was the pebble in the shoe. And then after going through that whole transition with you, watching, even I'm sure she was watching you as you were like, oh no, this animation that we were going to work on, it's falling through. And what am I going to do? And she's been with you every step of the way. This has got to be something for her too.
Oh no, for sure. For sure. And it's interesting because again, and I think you do your best to run the race side by side. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think she was running ahead for a bit. Then we were side by side for a bit. I think with The Chosen, I think she kind of felt like I started to run a little bit ahead now, so no, there's no way. It's been a beauty of this journey to be with her on this and to be times where I feel like I'm challenging her versus times that she's definitely challenged and pushed me well outside my comfort zone. I think, I look back and I go, okay, my mom had an impact. It's one of those things. I think you, as a parent, you do, if there's any advice to give, I think you just do, whether you're having an impact or not, just continue to do. I remember when I moved out of our house in Los Angeles, I'm going through and I'm packing up stuff and I'm like, why do I have two copies of this same book? Mm-hmm. And one was one that I had purchased to go through a Bible study, and one was one that my mom had purchased probably 6 years earlier for me and written in it. And I had never looked at it, right? But then all of a sudden it's like, so that was God going, yeah, okay, I've been working on you for a while.
Yeah, I've been here 6 years. Where have you been?
Yeah, where have you been? And I think my wife and I have had those same impacts on each other. So yeah, no, this doesn't happen. People often ask, what they can do for you know, how can we pray for you while you're on The Chosen? And I think we got plenty of people praying for us. I think it's our families. I mean, I can't stress enough. You know, we spend a fair amount of time away, even when I'm shooting in Texas. You know, so we start shooting in Texas again here July 7th, and we'll shoot through September 10th. But Sunday through Thursday night, I'm in a hotel an hour away because the hours are so long, right? So mm-hmm. that leaves my family unit, my wife being there, having to, you know, she's not, you know, we've grown to know that she's not alone, right? Mm-hmm. But she's on that front line without me, right? And that's so God's with her, and he's got her, and he's grown and us through this whole thing, but it's still really, really tough to go through some of these life things of growing, you know, two teenage girls on your own.
Yeah. Where would we be without our faithful mothers and faithful wives that stay in the trenches? Yeah. Amazing. Incredible. Yeah. So before I lose our time here, can you tell me about what's about to happen? Cause so we know that season 5 is on Amazon Prime right now. It just began yesterday. And then, so this will be season 5 coming out weekly, but then you also have an animated series that's about to drop, right?
Yeah. So we got to announce it at Chosen Con last October. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've been secretly, we've been talking about this since season 2. Daryl Eves, who's one of the executive producers and kind of the owner alongside Dallas, just said one day, he's like, you know, the Simpsons has run for 30 years. Why can't we do something that can just run forever? So it took a while to crack it. Ryan Swanson, who's the head writer that I was talking about on the live action. So he got to head up as the showrunner of this thing. Myself and Chad kind of double dutied. All of us were kind of double dutying on season 4 and 5 while it was being shot. And kind of spun up a little kids program. So it branches off. If for those who remember episode 3 of season 1, where Jesus spends the time with the kids. So it's called The Chosen Adventures. And it's really the stories of Abby and Joshua. Mm-hmm. And so they're a little 11 minute. And we were just last week in Burbank and finished what they call the audio mix. So it's the final balancing of the dialogue and the music and the sound effects. And so we are prepping that and looking for a partner to get it out to the world here. By the end of the year, it should be out. So.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, Chris June, I really appreciate you taking your time out to talk to us here at the Burrows. And I want you to know how much we appreciate all the work that you guys are doing out there. And I know that you guys are shooting season 6, and we just heard about the release. It's going to be a little bit extended, but I think that's okay. It needs to be, the story needs to be told correctly. So take your time, but you know, it's don't take away too much time from your family. But yeah. I sincerely appreciate you being here. And if you will hang on, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording here. But again, thanks for being on the show with me. And Eric Ogier, thank you for making this connection for us. So cool. And I really appreciate you guys.
My pleasure.
You ever make something so good, people start interrogating you like, what's in this? Did you make this from scratch? Where did you learn to cook like that? And I just smile because deep down, I know the truth. I didn't level up my skills. I leveled up my seasoning. It's called My Secret Ingredient. Let's start with the MVP. Everything. This blend? It's the Thor of the spice rack. Chicken. Glorious. Roasted veggies? I ate those on purpose. Yes, I sprinkled it on popcorn and suddenly became everyone's favorite movie host. And to be honest with you, I might have even tried it on possum. Yeehaw. Do I regret it? Of course, but only because I didn't notice that the tail was still on it. Rookie mistake. Everything just works. It's like confidence in a jar. Shake it on, and suddenly you're plating like you're on a cooking show without breaking a sweat. Then there's Steakhouse. This one's bold, smoky, and, like me, a bit dramatic. It makes burgers taste like they've been grilled by someone with strong opinions and great taste. I've used it on steak, mushrooms, even sweet potato fries. And every single time someone says, wait, did you marinate this for, what, 48 hours? Nope, just shook it on, flipped it, and took all the credit. Last week, my cousin asked me for a recipe, and I said, sure, I'll leave it to you in my will. So if you want to rule the kitchen without lifting a finger, go to mysecretblends.com. That's mysecretblends.com. And don't forget to use code Burrows for 20% off your first order. Shake it, serve it, smile sweetly when they ask, and say, shh, it's my secret.